Newspress.com.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel and Diane Duver are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11 on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara, at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets, and in Montecito's Upper Village. At Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
So how was your weekend, Neil?
I saw Rod Stewart last night.
Did he put on a good show?
He put on a very good show, despite the fact that he had a broken foot.
Wow.
Yes, and if I had a broken foot, I would be in bed crying. And he was out there, he was out there rocking. But I don't understand. I was complaining about this last night and this morning, that we had great seats, and some crazy woman insisted upon standing up two rows in front of us the entire time, looking through her iPhone, videotaping it. Why couldn't
that was
you
me.
Watch?
People Touché. Like you. Do you know I've been told that I had to be quiet at the bowl before at a concert? It's crazy. It's a concert. People are supposed to be dancing.
But then what's the point of getting good seats if you're going to stand?
You have even better seats. No one's standing in front
right,
of you.
Anyway, maybe I'm too old for rock concerts.
Maybe you should just stay home and watch them on TV.
No, but I go to rock concerts with the singers older than me. Which was, and they're harder and harder to find.
And doo-wop shows from time to time.
Right. And Rod Stewart, by the way, fits that character.
Now, do we have a guest today, Neil?
I have no idea.
We do. We're thrilled to welcome into studio Miguel Delgado Helseta from Channel Islands, Cal State.
CSUCI.
Yeah, the letters always confound me. So thank you so much for being here, Miguel.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm glad to be here.
So the first article is from today's Wall Street Journal, and it's the cover story on their business and finance section. And the article is entitled "Soft Sales Cast Shadow on Stock Market." And what the article summarizes is the fact that so far in this quarter, 35% of the companies that have reported earnings in the S&P 500 had a sales forecast that was below analyst expectation. Earnings, on the other hand, have been very good. And what the article is focused on is the fact that with tax cuts this year, the ability to compare after-tax earnings versus after-tax earnings last year, where there were no tax cuts, has resulted in very good earnings per share growth, which is helping the stock market. But if
additionally, it's helping with their price-to-earnings ratio, which is a measurement of whether stocks are expensive or cheap. So the end of last year in 2017, December, the P/E ratio was really going up. What the first half of this year did is really basically bring, if the P was going up on the price of the stock and the earnings were staying flat, it started to get expensive. As earnings rose because of the tax cuts as well as low unemployment, so that, you know, we can afford to buy corporate America's widgets, it's brought the price-to-earnings ratio down to long-term averages again.
And I wasn't going to mention this because it's not in the article, but since you bring up the P.E. ratio and since we have an economics professor here today, let me point out that the P.E. ratio, which is price-to-earnings, the reciprocal of the P.E. ratio is the capitalization rate that is a reflection of what people are expecting for return. And with the Fed tightening up on money, interest rates are going up, which means that the spread between the capitalization rate and interest rates are narrowing. And the only way to make that fit better would be to have price earnings ratios go down to get the capitalization rate up, meaning that this is another problem that we're facing, where is if interest rates continue to go up, the assumption would be that stocks would have to do even better to maintain the same PE ratio. And one of the things that this article does point out is that with interest rates going up, the dollar is going up in value, and with the dollar goes up, it is it could possibly result in a negative impact on exports. So if you look at all these factors,
Actually, it would have a negative impact on sales because people in foreign countries, it would be expensive for them to buy U.S. made goods.
That's what I meant by exports. Thank you for pointing that out. For those of us who are. Or English is a second language.
Well, you know, sometimes, Neil, you get confusing.
Right. Anyway, so just throw this up. You know, I think what's interesting about the article is everything that they say we kind of have talked about over the last couple of months. But what's interesting is here it's on the front page. And I think it's on the front page because the market's been down the last 2 weeks.
Right.
So the newspaper people are looking for I think if the market had been up the last 3 weeks, we wouldn't have seen this article.
You're absolutely right. And you know, what I think is an important thing to point out to our listeners is that the stock market is a leading indicator of the health of the economy. And by all charts, the macro look of our economy is looking good and healthy. But when you start seeing weakness in the stock market, or when you start seeing, you know, great earnings reports from companies, but then that stock price drops, it's time for you to reevaluate your allocation.
Well, you said the economy is doing great. It's okay to look at earnings per share within a certain limit, but I would like to see GDP growth because the earnings numbers are being, I think, distorted by all of
the share buybacks,
all of the share buybacks, and the tax comparisons. Mm-hmm. Once we go into next year, where the comparisons won't have the tax benefit, and we probably have less share buybacks because we have the money's been all spent. We'd have to start looking at GDP, and that's where sales numbers become important, and we're seeing a weakness.
They really become highlighted at that point.
Yeah. So the next article, I have to say, and I mentioned this to you before the show, is my favorite author that I always bring in something by Jason Swag from the Wall Street Journal, because he does the weekly investor column.
And do you think he's like a brother from another mother?
I do. In fact, if I retire, you may want to
ask him to be the co-host.
I've read this article four times, and I don't understand it. But because it's Jason Swig, we're going to talk about it, and I may get lost a little bit because it's very confusing.
I'll try to help define.
Thank you.
Clarify.
So the title of it is Why the Science of Success Offers Investors some Help. And one of the things that he talks about is a report by a Nobel Prize-winning economist Daniel Kahneman, who said that noise, or the tendency of our judgments to be swayed by such irrelevant factors as mood or time. And what he points out is that, and he uses this as empirical evidence, I'm not sure how relevant it is, that's why I got a little confused. He said, judges of classical music concerts believe they pick the best among great performers by evaluating how they sound. In fact, the judges pick winners by how they look. Figure skaters have historically given higher scores to skaters who compete in later rounds. And there's a whole bunch of examples of sort of, you know, examples of the psychology of making decisions based upon things other than what you should be making the decision on.
Well, it's almost like, you know, in listening to you speak about this article, it sounds a lot like confirmation bias. So your mind's already somewhat made up, and then you just get confirmed, or you find facts to make your decision, make you have evidence to support your decision.
So the what they say is a solution is make decisions in a random order. In other words, don't line up the decisions as you would the last time. sort of do things in a random order, kind of mix things up. You tend to do things in a certain rote way, do it a little bit differently. And the other interesting thing is he said that one of the characteristics they found in this book was that persistence is very, very important. And he uses as evidence of persistence is that Charles Darwin published his seminal book when he was 62 years old. Warren Buffett and Charles Munger are still going strong in 88 and 94. And so the view is here, if you're successful and experienced and you mix things up, you have a better chance of success. And I have to say, after now talking about it here on the show and reading it four times, I'm still not sure I understand it. So could you want to explain it to me?
Well, I'll explain it to you off air.
Okay. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Sunday, October 28th is the date for the annual Summit for Danny Community Climb. It's a benefit for the Daniel Bryant Youth and Family Center. Here's Catherine Ramack.
This is our 17th annual. And a few years ago, because of all the fires that were happening, we decided we were going to see if we could change it to Ealing's Park. And who knew, I didn't, that Ealing's had all these incredible hiking trails. We all start at Ealing's Park, staggered times. There's an easy, a moderate, and advance. And they're all staggered, so you finish at the same time. And we have such a glorious day up at Godric Park, and there is going to be a great band playing, great barbecue with Kiwanis, and we give out awards. And so you can go to summitfordanny.org. You can start a team there. You can enroll there. And oh, here's the other great thing about Ealing's Park that people love. You can bring your dogs.
To register for the hike or to make a donation, go to summitfordanny.org. That's summitfordanny.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we could be reached at 805-564-1290.
Or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com. We have Dr. Miguel Delgado Halseta, who's the Director of Global Economic Research at Cal State University at Channel Islands. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, where you come from, how you ended up here in Santa Barbara. And
sure. I'm originally half Costa Rican, half Norwegian. I was born in Norway.
That's an interesting mix.
Grew up in Costa Rica, and then in my early 20s moved to the U.S., to California. I was still in school, finished school here. Got into a master's program at UCSB. That's how I ended up in Santa Barbara. Did that for a year, and I got a job at a local consulting firm, stuck around here, and kind of had the desire to teach. So I went back to school one more time at UCSB and got my PhD there. And then after that, I got a position at Cal State Channel Islands, CSUCI.
And you have a very strong Norwegian accent.
I suppose. Maybe I do. I don't know. Costa Rican, more likely.
I was going to say Costa Rica is such a lovely place. It's one of my favorite places.
Yeah, we just had a terrible accident there. I don't know if you saw in the news. Some American tourists were river rafting, and four of them passed away, I think, 2 nights ago. So that was terrible news. But
Yeah, that is terrible.
Otherwise, a great place to visit for sure.
Yes, absolutely. On a brighter note, it was lovely when I was there. So you got both your master's degree and your doctorate degree from UC Santa Barbara. Where did you go to undergrad?
UC Riverside.
Oh, UC Riverside.
So I did most of it in Costa Rica, but when I moved here, I was still about a year and a half from being done, and I finished at Riverside.
Wonderful. And so how did you come to realize you wanted to be a professor?
So when I did my master's, I had the advantage that I had an economics degree as an undergrad. A lot of my master's classmates did not. At that time, UCSB was pushing this program to a lot of the engineers so they could get like a dual degree, 4 years for engineering, then an extra year for their master's in econ, like business economics. And so I had a different background than most of my classmates, and so I got an opportunity to be a tutor at UCSB's tutoring center, which my classmates could not have done because they didn't have that background. And I just loved doing that. You know, I really enjoyed the teaching part of it. I at that point, I wasn't thinking about grad school again. I wasn't thinking about a longer
You were probably
commitment.
Thinking about a job that's paying you money.
Oh, yeah, I was just thinking about, I want to go out there, work, and never look back at school. But I just always kind of kept thinking, I want to do this. You know, I want to teach. I'd love to do that. And so after a few years doing consulting.
So what type of consulting did you do?
I'll tell you more about it. It's a small economic consulting firm here in Santa Barbara. At the time that I joined them, I increased the size of the firm by about 20%. So it was really small at the time. They've grown quite a bit after. And their main business at the time was doing housing studies for the military, essentially going out and figuring out, you know, how much housing do you need to build on an installation to house military families or individual soldiers. And so I did that for a few years, really enjoyed it. It was a great learning experience, but I always felt I wanted to get back into something where I could teach. And so that's how I ended up going back to UCSB.
That's actually a very unique background for somebody in your role as a professor at a Cal State, where you have that real life experience of having a job that's outside of academia. So I'm sure that gives you a unique perspective that your students can really appreciate, because we all don't go into teaching after we take classes.
Sure, sure. And, to me, that was a great selling point of the Cal State system, in that I recognized that unlike a place like UCSB, that it's very research-oriented, in the Cal State system, a lot of those students are going to go out there and get their hands dirty as soon as they're done with their bachelor's degree. And so I saw that as an opportunity to bring knowledge of what the work looks like once you get your bachelor's. I did it after I got my master's, but I figured it would be fairly similar. So I could bring to them some experience that was relevant to the things that I think that they will do once they finish their degrees. So certainly when I was applying for work, I was hoping to find a place where that would be the case, where I could give people, use my knowledge about real-world work, if you will, to put that into practice.
Absolutely. Now, tell us a little bit about the Global Economic Research Department.
So IGER is an institute that I just took over, essentially. The former director, Dr. Son, he just retired, and so I took it over, hoping to refocus it a little bit. Precisely on that experiential learning for the students. Right now, I'm working with three students. This is kind of we're rebuilding it from the ground up, which is something very different from what it was before.
That's exciting.
Yeah, and so I'm working with a small group of students. We're hoping that group will grow to maybe about 10 or 15 per semester, and our whole goal is to work on local economic stuff. So. We take questions from, say, chambers of commerce. Like I got an email from somebody in the Conejo Valley Chamber saying, you know, we're looking for information about employment in the area. We're looking for this kind of information. We don't know where to find it. Is this something you can help us with? And so I basically task my students, let's find this. Let's answer this question. We've gotten a couple of emails or questions from newspapers saying, you know, can you tell us something about the economic conditions in the area, in the Tri-County area? And what we try to do is provide data-driven answers. So I get my students working on it. And, of course, that's a lot of work on me, too, because I have to verify that what they're doing is actually what we're supposed to do. But that's what we do. We work together on projects. And so it's not as much like a classroom. It's more they come to my office and I say, here are some things that people are asking us to do. Let's work on these projects together. Let's figure out who needs to do what. We divide up the work. We sit there for a couple of hours doing things. And then we regather a couple of days later and kind of see where we stand. And that's essentially what we want to do is, you know, expose them to the kind of work that I think that they will do once they get out there, which will be collect a lot of data, answer questions, not just by opinion, but by actually having some data behind it and knowing where to find that data and what to do with it.
And this is one of the things that distinguishes CI from other schools is, you know, think about it. You have essentially a class with a professor where it's just three of you, as opposed to going to a seminar at a big teaching university where you have 700 students. So it's an incredible opportunity for students to really get close to the professor, get close to the data. And, you know, this is one of the marketing stories of CSUCI. And the more I speak to professors, the more I realize it's just not a marketing story. It's actually true.
Right. I mean, we were talking a little about this before the show started. We still have fairly small class sizes. Of course, the case with Iger is an extreme case. I mean, it's not very common to have a three-student class. But again, we're hoping it will grow to about 10 to 15, which is still a really good ratio. And it's the kind of thing where we're actually working, you know, and they're actually seeing me, how I will go about doing something. I'm seeing them try the same stuff. I'm learning from them how they think about the things that we're doing. They learn from me just about, you know, I have the experience in doing this sort of stuff, and they get to see it firsthand, ask questions, stop me as we're doing it. You know, we do some programming. They review the code that I'm writing on for whatever we're doing and so on. So it's a very experiential, hands-on in a way that I think it's hard to get in sort of the larger institutions where, you know, the small classes are the 40 to 50 ones. So it's an entirely different experience. And I know Iger is not the only institute on campus, and we're not the only course that does this. I know courses in other disciplines that are doing the same thing, working with the students hands-on. So I think it's a great opportunity for them, especially, again, because I think a lot of them, they want to finish the degree and they want to go out and work. And so this gives them that experience firsthand.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Lori Leite from American Riviera Bank. Life is complicated. We can't help you with carpooling the kids to soccer practice or restoring all your files when your laptop crashes. But when it comes to banking, we can make your life much easier. With cutting-edge technology, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks only dream of, we deliver smart banking for smart people. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people. In Santa Barbara at Figaro and Anacapa, and in Montecito's Upper Village.
Juice, Mom. Juice, juice, juice.
Mommy, why are we going to the store? Mom.
Mom, I want juice.
Mom.
Juice, juice, juice.
Mommy.
Juice, juice, juice.
Mom.
Juice, juice.
Your child will have different needs at different stages of life, and that includes the car seat. That's right, the car seat. A car seat isn't one size fits all. You have to have the right seat based on your child's age, weight, and height. See, car crashes are a leading killer of children ages 1 to 13. But there's a website that gives you all the information you need. safercar.gov/the right seat. You'll find out about types of seats, when to have a seat rear-facing, when to switch it to forward-facing, when it's time for a booster seat, and when it's time for your child to ride in the back seat with a seatbelt. Protect your child's future at every stage of life. Go to safercar.gov/the right seat. That's safercar.gov/the right seat.
A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
No student in California should face discrimination. Let's teach tolerance to our children early on to provide a foundation of respect and acceptance that will last a lifetime. This is Eric Hines, president of the California Teachers Association. Let's encourage children to be accepting of others regardless of race, gender, religion, or sexual identification. Together, we can create a future where all are welcomed.
A message from the California Teachers Association.
Welcome Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
So in the break, we were talking a little bit about how the Institute for Global Economic Research got the name IGER. And so tell us, how did that happen?
So the main thing is I inherited the Institute, right? I mean, the Institute was already running, and it was already named IGER.
So you're taking no responsibility.
Yeah, that's the first thing.
Next question.
and, you know, Dr. Son had probably a much more sort of global view for it. And he was very connected with people all over the place, particularly in Korea. And so he tried to give it that sort of focus of the international stuff, the global stuff. And we toyed with the idea of changing the name.
So are you primarily focusing on more local,
we're primarily
domestic issues
thinking about
now?
Local stuff. And by local, I mean Tri-County, mostly Ventura. And we're hoping to be able to do things at the sub-county level where we can talk about different cities and so on. But Eiler kind of doesn't sound any better, you know, Institute for Local Economic Research. And then, you know, I came to the conclusion that, yes, there are a lot of things that are very local. And one of the questions that we get often is about housing. You know, housing is a huge deal around here. And yes, housing markets are very local, but the reality is that some of it is driven by very global things. Interest rates is something that the Fed determines and plays a big role in determining, and it's something that is global. And so we figured we don't want to seem like we don't do anything outside of Ventura County or of our local area, and so we kept the name. I always find it a little bit challenging myself, you know, and people ask, is it IGER? Is it IGER?
Right. I think you should rename it The Institute.
That would be it.
Not that you're asking for my advice.
Tiger, like the IGER, Tiger.
Right. So this is really interesting in that how would you say it compares to the economic forecast that Dr. Rupert puts out at UCSB?
Sure. So, Dr. Rupert was one of my advisors in grad school, and I worked a lot with him. I worked a lot with him for the EFP even after I left the institution. And so we're trying to do something similar but not quite the same. One of the things that I wanted to get away from was forecasting. You know, I think UCSB—
Because you know it's always wrong.
Well, I know it's always very challenging.
Right.
You know, and then EFP is good at what they do. Cal Lutheran has an institute that also does forecasting, and they're good at what they do. And so I felt like we would not have a lot to offer to compete with them. We only have one econometric course for our economic students. They don't go into time series and forecasting. And so it would be very challenging to take those students and on top of everything else we're doing, trying to get them to learn how to forecast. And so we wanted to focus more on answering questions. So sort of look at the data and see what the data told us more than saying, here's what's going to happen in the next year or two. And so we, you know, a big part for me was refocusing on that, on the answering of the questions in a data-driven fashion and not so much on trying to predict what's going to happen over the next 2 or 3 years, it's very challenging.
Now, do you have a process that you screen these requests that people have? So I think to myself as I sit here and I listen to what the Institute does, is it nonprofits? Is it governmental agencies? Who's primarily asking and what process do you have to weed out some questions from others?
So at this point, we haven't had the luxury of having to weed out a lot. I mean, it's not like we're
inundated with questions, right?
But so we've gotten a few from different media outlets. And then, like I said, we just got something from the Conejo Valley Chamber. And so far, that's what we're dealing with. We had a request, but it's sort of a longer-term request from the Southern California chapter of Appraiser Association, something along those lines. And so I will be giving a talk for them in February. They have a convention going on in Ventura, and I'll be talking there. And so that's one thing that we're working on sort of more long term. They gave us a longer set of things that they would like us to touch upon, and we're working on that as part of everything else that we do. But so at this point, we don't have much of a process of eliminating anything because we're actually trying to welcome as much as we can, all sorts of connections, all sorts of questions. And I mean, hopefully we'll get to the day where we have to say we can't do everything. We got to prioritize here. But at this point, we have enough leeway on some of these things that we can actually get them done on time, I think. So we haven't had to turn anything away.
Now, what is the growth strategy for the class? I'm assuming that your vision isn't to keep it at three students.
No, I mean, that would be great in the sense of giving those students opportunities. But certainly we want to get more students involved. One thing we're doing is for our senior economics majors, we have a economics seminar class that they've taken their last year. And one thing that I'm working with the chair of economics to do is to offer them the option of take the seminar or go work in Iger for one semester. And so I've already gotten several students interested in doing this. So I think we're already going to see growth next semester. And then we're hoping that sort of word of mouth of what we do and, you know, the learning experience as we start putting some of them out in the workforce, that they'll come back and say, oh, this was great. You know, you should do this. And they start telling their friends, this is a great opportunity to do a more hands-on thing. And that will keep, you know, a good 10 to 15 students per semester after that.
The school prides itself on collaboration between departments. And I was just wondering whether or not it would make sense, because one of the benefits of doing this research has nothing to do with economics. It has to do with primary research, coming up with an understanding of a question. It doesn't matter what the question is. Mm-hmm. So I wonder whether you could reach out to students in other departments as a way of teaching them critical thinking, research process, and therefore expanding the benefit of this program to beyond the product that you're providing.
Sure. So, you know, there is a little bit of a challenge in the everyday language that we use and the tools that I expect the students to already have some knowledge of coming into the course. I have had some thoughts about reaching out to computer science. I think that's an area where we can mutually benefit. Machine learning is becoming a super important thing in any field. A lot of the work of my dissertation was done using a web crawler that I built with my brother. And I think those sorts of skills are going to become much more important for students as we move forward, being able to figure out where to get data in less conventional ways. And I think computer science is, you know, very well poised to do that, much better than the economics people are. And so I would hope that we could bring some of them on board. They teach us some of the coding that we need, and they learn some things from us about the economic side and the things that we look at there. So that's one particular collaboration that I've thought about that I think would be great.
I even think about communications and just the putting together surveys to get that data.
Excuse me, Diane, who's going to ask the follow-up question? Do you want me to do it, or do you have the guts to ask what
go
a
ahead.
Web crawler is?
I know, so you go
ahead.
Oh,
you do know?
Yeah, look at that.
Okay, what's a web crawler?
I won't answer it as skillfully,
yeah.
of course.
You don't know.
No, it's like this little, it's like an algorithm that goes through the internet and collects data on whatever you're trying to find out. So if the web crawler is about radio stations, it's going to go through the web or internet and find.
You have to feed it?
It crawls only with codes.
Only with code?
Was I right?
Yeah, that's right.
Basically.
So I wrote my dissertation using data from a Mexican job site advertisement, kind of like a monster.com or Career Builder, but the version in Mexico. And so we needed to collect advertisements, and we asked for them nicely. We asked the web people if they would give it to us, and they said, it's out there. You can get it. My brother's a programmer, and so he helped me program this thing that basically collected every ad that got posted, and then we parsed through it to get some text and so on. So that's essentially what it is you're crawling through websites, making sure you scrape everything that is on a particular website of interest to you.
I'm impressed. You must have had notes on this. He must have told you in advance.
I think it's just a generational gap.
What's the web?
So given your research, and though it's coming local, I can't help but to think about the immigration crisis that we have out there, especially today with the 5,000 or 7,500 caravan coming towards the U.S. and what economic impacts that could have to our region as we're not that far away from the southern border.
Sure. So, you know, immigration is a challenging subject. You know, the human part of me kind of struggles to understand how the place where you're born has such a saying in the opportunity that you're afforded in your life. And so when you think about that, and also if you think about, if you like free markets and free trade, and you think that products should be able to move back and forth, you should think that the inputs of production should also be able to travel back and forth, and that includes people. And so, in my opinion, we wouldn't have any borders, right? We would just travel freely. And but I'm also understanding of the laws, and I'm also respectful of the laws. And so I understand that, you know, you can't just let people do whatever they want if that means circumventing the law. And those actions do have consequences in the future. If you create amnesty, then some of them, you know, people in the future will say, oh, you know, I know there's no repercussion in the long run, so I'll keep doing it. In terms of the economic impact, you know, immigrants are such a driving force of our economy in so many aspects. And, you know, growing up in Costa Rica, we have a similar situation. We have a lot of immigration from Nicaragua, and we've had periods in which that has been a point of contention. Right? People are not always happy about immigration.
Because it's a drain on the economy.
Right, but the reality is that most of them are there willing and ready to work, and oftentimes willing and ready to do the jobs that other people don't want to do. And what they can do for us is just, you know, be an extra source of labor for our economy. Our unemployment rates are so low right now that we probably need as many workers as we can find. There's more jobs out there than there are people to fill them.
And one of the interesting things about our population is that its growth rate is shrinking, and we could end up like Japan, where they have negative population growth, which has, you know, dire indications for GDP growth. You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
It may be hard to believe, but people just like you are already saving money. FeedThePig.org makes it easy. Their simple savings plan teaches you how to start saving without going overboard, so you don't need to mooch off your friends.
You gonna finish that grape?
You mean the one in my mouth?
You don't need to stop buying the necessities.
What you're smelling is a natural musk.
Ew.
You don't need to be a medical test subject.
How do you feel?
Mostly okay. I... Sometimes, though.
You don't need to get a second job as a stuntman.
We need a new stuntman! Let's break for lunch.
You just need an internet connection. Don't get left behind. Start your personal savings plan with the tips and tools on feedthepig.org. That way, you don't need to sell your soul to the devil.
$15 is the best I can do.
All right, deal.
Brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks could only dream about.
So as you receive requests for different types of questions, of finding out data-driven answers to these questions, are you... if you don't have anybody asking questions, are you headed down a path naturally of whether it be housing in Ventura County or some other brush?
We have a couple of things. We're hoping to, much like the Economic Forecast Project, we're hoping to produce something maybe quarterly or semi-annually where we report on the economy. Again, we're hoping to report it at a deeper level. And so we're hoping to be able to separate, say, Camarillo from Ventura, from Oxnard. And so things like demographics, housing, production levels, and so on. So we're hoping to do that. And we're working on that sort of on the side of everything else that we're doing.
And so do you envision having a a presentation to the community, much like the economic forecast does?
We do. We're hoping to have something next semester. We just figured the first semester would be too soon in terms of just getting our legs under us. You know, Dr. Son used to have a couple of events per semester, but they were most often invited speakers. So, like I said, he had a lot of connections out there in different fields, and so he will invite people to talk about exporting to China or, you know, some kind of big topics like that. And so, again, I felt like it was too soon to put something on when we hadn't really done anything. And so we're hoping to head in the direction of having something maybe once a year, maybe once per semester, where we report on things that would be interesting to our local economy. And so that was the other thing about it is I realized that most of our students are not going to get a degree and go out and export to China. A lot of them are going to stay locally and work locally. And so I think focusing on local stuff made a lot of sense. And so we're hoping to get there.
I think you're a secret that's kept, because I've got to imagine that the governments of the Ventura County cities would have a lot of questions that they would love to know data-driven answers to.
Sure, and we're working on that. You know, I'm working with different people at school that have a lot of connections in the community, and the idea is to build those relationships and let people know that we exist and what we do, so that they feel comfortable and that they know we do a good job, which is important too, so that they will say, oh, we want to reach out to you. The other thing we're trying to do is rebuild our website, and we're hoping for that to be a place in which you can get local statistics as they become available. And so, again, this is where hopefully we can get some people from computer science on board. At this point, we're working on this on our own, trying to get something where we have processes in place. So a lot of this first cohort of IGER students is really about getting, you know, a foundation of what we're doing and getting some processes in place so we can keep improving on this.
And keep updating the statistics.
Right. And so somebody in the Chamber of Commerce locally says, oh, I wonder what's going on with, I don't want to go to the BLS to get unemployment. I don't want to go to, you know, BEA to get something about GDP. I want to go to one place where I can see everything. I can see some nice graphs and tables. And, I'll just go to the IGER website because I know that they're updating this stuff and they're getting the most up to date for us. And you know, and breaking it down as much as they can into our different communities so we can find answers for our area specifically.
The UCSB version of this, do they take on contract work for businesses or governments where they were paid for a specific task?
They do. And you know, and I was involved in some of them. They did a lot of what they call economic impact studies. And so I remember, for example, we got at the time I was working with Peter Rupert, and SPCC wanted to know what their impact was on the local economy, and they hired UCSB to do a study of it. We did some work for the Santa Barbara Airport, same kind of thing. And so they do that.
So why can't you do that too?
You know, I'm just now getting my feet wet in the politics of things, of how things work. My understanding is that we cannot do for-hire work. We could request donations. For example, we can do work for the local community and say, hopefully you can donate to the school if you like what we're doing and you want to support that. But I believe we cannot, you know, go out and say, oh, we'll charge you this much to do this for you. Again, I don't know politically or contractually how that works, but that's my understanding.
Now, do you still have collaborations going on with Dr. Rupert over at UCSB?
You know, he's a mentor, and I talked to him. I talked to him when I took on this role. We haven't worked on anything together since. Every now and then, he may shoot me an email with some question about something I worked on before. But we haven't worked on anything specific at this point. He did say, you know, hopefully we can put some stuff together. Once you're running the institute, we could even have some presentation together. So we're hoping that will happen.
And you say Tri-State area, but you always talk about Ventura.
No, Tri-State's back in New York.
I mean,
this is Tri-County.
Right. I'm sorry. I used to be.
Welcome to California, Neil.
Yeah, I'm actually from New York. That's why I made that mistake. But how much of your work or any of your work is going to be in Santa Barbara?
We're hoping to collect the data for all three counties and maybe even LA. So when I say tri-county, I'm thinking of like San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, Ventura. Our focus certainly will be Ventura, and I think that's where we'll get most interest. But we're hoping to do stuff in Santa Barbara as well. Again, this one thing that I haven't seen any of the other institutes do is go deeper at a sub-county level. And I know that the EFB sort of divides North County, South County in the work that they do, but I don't think they do a lot of things by neighborhood or by zip code, which we're hoping to do. It's also challenging because data doesn't become available as easily once you go below the county level. So a lot of assumptions need to go into the work that you do there, but we're hoping to do that. And so if we do, we're hoping that we can build the processes so that it's easy to do it everywhere. And so it's not like, oh, this only works if we do it in Ventura, but we have the process in place, and now all we have to do is do the same thing in Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo.
So that you're going to start in Ventura and then look to scale it from there?
That's right. And again, for some things that we've been asked specifically about the tri-county area. And so what we've done is that we've compiled the statistics at the aggregate level for the three. And so, for example, like if you're looking at unemployment rates, they get reported as a rate, but you also get the data that you can calculate them from. And so what we do is that we add them up for the areas and we calculate the actual unemployment rate for the tri-county instead of each county separately, for example. So
I've been looking at the name, and I have a solution which is so simple that it can't be wrong, how to change the name. ER, economic research, ER. And that's obviously means like, you know, has a connotation to it. The ER department is CSUCI. There, you see this, no matter what you thought of the show, you have the solution to your naming problem.
They may think we have a medical school at CI when they see this, and they're like, oh, let's go to the ER.
To the ER. And you may not get healthier, but you'll get smarter. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit the KellyMarshTeam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life, young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones you're used to.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent. Brought to you by the Ad Council and gradsoflife.org.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
So, Miguel, your expertise is really in labor and the economy. And so as you see, you know, one of the major issues facing the Central Coast really is the housing and the labor and how housing costs and labor and how they drive together and or not. Tell us a little bit about what you see and what you are experiencing or finding in your research on that topic.
Sure. As I mentioned earlier, you know, housing is one of the things that everybody who asks us anything, that's one topic that they want to know about is housing.
It's because, funny, you move here and everyone's like, how much did you buy your house for?
I know, seriously.
Like anywhere else in the country, that would be a taboo topic.
Seriously.
Here it's like, how much is it?
And so, you know, housing is such an important part of our lives. And certainly the Central Coast, and Santa Barbara in particular, housing costs are so high. You know, I can see it with my classmates from grad school. Nobody stayed around. I was fortunate enough to get a job here in town that paid well enough that I could stay here. But generally, they finish school and they're gone because it's so expensive to live here, right? And I think that's a general concern in most of the cities in our coast is how expensive everything is and how hard it is to attract people to come here. I mean, you know, it goes both ways. It's a beautiful place. All the cities along the coast here are beautiful, and they have a lot of features that are very desirable, which is why they're so expensive. You know, I mean, people don't talk about a crisis of Rolex or of Porsches, and those are things that are very expensive and not everyone can afford, much like housing here, because they're things that are desirable. People want them, right? And so housing in California, the amenities that we have, the outdoors, they're great, and people want to live here. We have some natural constraints to our housing stock, and that makes housing more expensive. We can't just keep building and building. It's challenging. We have some non-natural constraints, right? We have building restrictions. We have different codes and so on that make it difficult to build much more or build much higher, build much more density. Those things are going to make housing be less affordable, and I don't see that changing. I think the reality is we're running out of space more than getting more space. It will be a challenge. And until jobs can, you know, employers can afford to pay more to attract people, that will be a problem.
CSU Channel Islands, though, has decided on its own to help that supply problem by building housing on campus. CSU CI has the luxury of having a lot of land, and one of the initiatives is to build with private-public partnership housing not only for students and professors but anyone. And there's been a whole bunch of studies to show that if a campus has, you know, retired people, it benefits the retired people who go to classes and the students who get to see older people. And at the same time, you're taking dirt and making it into housing. And there's some beautiful housing on campus or near campus.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, props to your school for doing that.
Thank you. And, you know, and there are some solutions out there. But again, I think we're dealing with a different set of constraints. So certainly where there is a lot of land, there's still opportunities to build. Well, of course, Ventura has SOAR, and we deal with some of the issues there with the restrictions on where you can build and how much you can build because we have to preserve a lot of the agricultural land. And so much like in Santa Barbara, that puts some real constraints on how much more you can build and how many more people you can house. And again, being an attractive area as it is, people want to come and live here. And what's going to happen is that only those who can really afford it are going to make it, and those who can't are not. And that has an impact on services. That has an impact on being able to provide even basic services, medicine and so on. I mean, doctors are generally well paid, but they're much less well paid if they're here than if they're living in a much cheaper place. And so I think that will continue to be a problem for our area. And I don't see that there's a lot of solutions coming down our way. We have a few propositions on the ballot. I don't think either of them, I think in a 5 and 10, I don't think they're going to solve the housing issue. Some of them may actually exacerbate the issues. And so at the end of the day, I think we have to live with the fact that housing here is expensive. And hopefully there is enough employers paying well enough to keep the economy running with all the services that we need. But it's no doubt a challenge.
Well, thank you, Miguel, for everything you do. Thank you for being a guest today. You've all been listening to Money Talk. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
It's